The hour of 10:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee. Members, you have the agenda before you. We are going to go over the two bonding requests, capital investment requests of the University of Minnesota and the Minn State System. So with that, we'll have the University of Minnesota first. And I think it's Provost, is it Croson?
Croson, very good.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record. And I believe you're going to tell us that President Ettinger is on his way into Minnesota, and he did text the committee a couple of days ago and apologize for not being here. We appreciate the fact that President Ettinger has made almost all of these committee hearings. So with that, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. I'm Rachel Croson. I'm honored to serve as the Executive Vice President and Provost at the University of Minnesota. Thank you, Chair Pulaski and members of the committee. I'm very happy to be here with you today representing Interim President Ettinger. I am the Provost of the Twin Cities campus and the Chief Academic Officer of the system. I am an economist by training with specialization in behavioral and experimental economics. I'd like to recognize one of our regents, Regent Mary Turner, who has joined us today. First, I'm sure you've received the announcement that on Monday of this week, the Board of Regents chose Dr. Rebecca Cunningham, Vice President for Research and Innovation at the University of Minnesota, as the 18th president. The University of Michigan, as the 18th president of the University of Minnesota. I want to reiterate how delighted I and the university community is with this choice. We know that Dr. Cunningham will help us advance our mission of discovery, education, and service to the state of Minnesota. President-designate Cunningham's anticipated start date is July 1st, 2024. I know that Interim President Ettinger offered a substantive introduction when he was here last week, so I'm going to keep my remarks very brief. I do want to mention one topic that emerged at that hearing, which is student placement rates. As Interim President Ettinger mentioned, our system-wide placement rate is over 90%. That means over 90% of our undergraduates are either employed or continuing their education upon graduation. Of those employed, over two-thirds of them, in particular 67.3%, are working for a company or organization in Minnesota. This statistic is the one that was shared in the December Board of Regents meeting. We are so proud that so many of our graduates remain in Minnesota and contribute to our economy. Our placement rates and how they break down between the various categories can be found on our public dashboard. I'd be delighted to share the web address with anyone who might be interested. Now to the business today. We're hoping to secure support from the House Higher Education Committee for our capital budget here before you today. Our capital budget request, totaling $500 million, is entirely devoted to higher education asset preservation and replacement, or HEPR. We want to thank the authors, Representative Walgamott, for agreeing to author our bonding bill in the House. This request would allow for the renewal of more than 150 buildings to support education, research, and outreach across the state of Minnesota. The funding would help to address a large and unfortunately growing backlog of facility needs across our campuses. I also want to reiterate that we are eager to enhance our partnership with all of you this session and beyond. We cannot be a great university without significant help from the state of Minnesota. And similarly, a strong university contributes to the health and greatness of our state. I invite any of you to visit any of our system campuses to get a glimpse of what we're doing to educate our students, to create and discover, and to improve the lives of all Minnesotans. Thank you for your continued support of this mission. Now I'd like to turn it over to Alice Roberts-Davis, Vice President for University Services, to discuss details of our bonding request. But if time permits, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have, either now or at the end of the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chair Pulaski and members of the committee. I am Alice Roberts-Davis. I am Vice President for University Services at the University of Minnesota. I am very pleased to be here with you today, and I would also like to acknowledge another regent in the room. We have Regent Mehron, who is chair of our regents, who's joined us as well. I'd like to also acknowledge that this time last year, I would have spent time with many of you as well as Commissioner of Administration. So it's good to be back here with you in a different capacity, but still doing work for the great state of Minnesota. We really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about the partnership between the state and the university. Since HEPR was first enacted in 1994, the university has made it a top priority. And for us this year, it is our only priority for capital bonding, meaning that we won't be asking for any additional dollars for new buildings or projects. Our request is for $500 million, similar to the request that you've heard from Minnesota State. And our interim president, Ettinger, and Chancellor Olson have been working closely together, traveling around the state and talking about this need and why it is such a high priority for both of our systems.
Vice President Roberts Davis, I'm going to pause you for a second. In the Capital Investment Committee, we had an interesting exchange, you and I, over how the governor came up with this $102 million that he had in his budget. Could you explain what you told us in capital investment to this committee, how that number was arrived at?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not sure how the governor arrived at the $103 million that he recommended. What I suggested is that when we prioritized our projects, you would see roughly about $103 million for the top project for each campus, with some additional money for some HVAC, roof, window projects, et cetera, because those are our top needs.
So, Vice President Roberts Davis, if we gave you approximately the same number with the stipulation that it be used that way, what would the reaction of the University of Minnesota be?
Of course, Chair Pulaski, we would be grateful for the HEPR dollars, but I think there would be a lot of unanswered, really critical needs across our campuses and outreach centers.
Vice President Roberts Davis, I appreciate the answer. As you know, the capital investment bill is probably the primary bill this session, and we're scrambling to make sure we address as many needs as we possibly can, and today you're going to give us the biggest needs of the University of Minnesota. The ongoing discussion will be how the systems use whatever it is that we do give them. So I'm intrigued by the fact that if that is the way the governor developed his bonding, but you're not sure that is the way, it just happens to be if you add those numbers together.
That's correct, Mr.
All right.
Chair.
Thank you for the clarification. Proceed.
Absolutely. Again, this $500 million approach, the number that we've requested is a different approach than we've used in the past because our circumstances are so dire. Our message really is that if you will give us the $500 million to update our existing facilities, that we won't ask for money for new projects. Additionally, we've heard from the legislature for years anecdotally that we should be taking care of the projects and the buildings that we already have instead of building new. And what we are saying is we've heard you and we would like to do that. We will also agree to not create any net new square footage. Our focus would be with implementing HEPR dollars and consolidating and shedding any obsolete square footage on our campuses. At the university, much like the state, we use a systematic approach to assess and grade the condition of our buildings and track their progress over time. What is particularly concerning for us is that we have now achieved about a $6 billion need. And more than 30% of our buildings are in poor or critical condition. You should look at the donut and read the red and yellow together because fair and below average buildings can fall into poor and critical condition very quickly without a timely investment. State bond funding is less predictable than ever. There is very little ability for us to forecast how much funding the university will receive, when it will receive funding, and even if it will receive funding. And this unpredictability makes it very difficult for us to create accurate and meaningful capital plans and to align the development of reinvestment projects with the availability of state funding. Over the last decade, the university has only received about 10% of the funding that we've requested, and in half of the last 10 years, we received $0 for HEPR. Buildings already in disrepair have slid further into disrepair. Now, each of us knows that if your home is 50, 60, or 70 years old, you can expect to replace major equipment. You'll need to replace the plumbing and the electrical and the mechanical, and you'll probably even need to do something with the roof or the windows, and it's no different for us at the university. An emergency repair is far more expensive than a planned upgrade.
Vice President Roberts Davis, we have Representative Wolgamott has a question.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam Vice President, for being here this morning, as well as for taking time out of your busy schedule last week to welcome me to campus to take a look at some of the top projects in this HEPR request. It was very helpful to go and see firsthand both the severe need of state investment in these projects that are on this list, but then also the kind of excitement of the potential of what we can do by investing in these brick and mortar projects. So just wanted to thank you and acknowledge that. It was a very impactful experience for me. One thing, Mr. Chair, that I really wanted to emphasize the committee's attention and the public's attention is, if you wouldn't mind going back a previous chart, Madam Vice President, the inconsistent state funding contribution to backlog, and if you look at that number in the bottom right corner, 11%. Let that sink in, Mr. Chair and members, that over the past 10 years, we have only funded 11% of the university's infrastructure needs. That, to me, feels like a dereliction of duty on the part of our state, and it cannot continue. We need to step up and do a better job as a state and live up to our promise of supporting these buildings and their infrastructure. So, Madam Vice President, in light of that number, that 11% of what's been received of the need over the past 10 years, Madam Vice President, can you convey to us what that 11%, if that were to continue, if we were to continue to have the status quo and just do kind of the bare minimum 11% of funding these requests, what impact does that have on enrollment? What impact does that have on Minnesota's workforce, on attracting students, the best and brightest students from throughout the country to come and learn in our facilities? And then lastly, what impact, if that continues, does that have on attracting businesses to the state of Minnesota? Because when you hosted me last week at the food and nutrition building that's at the top of the list of requests, I was really taken aback to see a poster board that had graphics of all the different businesses that partner with the U to do research, to do development in that building. That's huge for our state's economy to be. It's a major attractor for businesses to be able to have the University of Minnesota and all of your resources and all of the brain power there. But again, if we continue at 11%, what impact does that have on our ability to attract businesses to our state? Mr. Chair, Madam Vice President, if you could just kind of paint the picture of, you know, it's one thing to look at a number on a spreadsheet, but what impact does that 11% have on our enrollment, on our workforce, on our ability to partner with and attract businesses to our state?
Vice President Roberts Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wolgamott, thank you for taking the time to come out early and take a tour of our campus. We really enjoyed showing you our top priorities, and that question is a very big question. There's a lot there. I'd love to take the next 90 minutes of the hearing to talk about all the different ways in which that funding impacts so many critical things at the university, but I'll be brief and talk a little bit more about it throughout the presentation. But to hit the highlights, enrollment suffers. It absolutely suffers because of it, and we think that there's obviously a chicken and an egg type of situation there. Do we see declining enrollment at times because of our facilities? Because students have a choice. We have to be competitive. They have the opportunity to look at other universities, and they're looking at the facilities. They're looking at the faculty. The faculty is attracted by the facilities, the laboratories, the actual physical plant that they'll be working in. You'll hear from our associate professor today who will say that grants are highly dependent upon the facilities that you're able to present to the granting agencies or grantors. And so enrollment is highly dependent upon what type of facilities we can produce. And on top of that, we have done a very good job with our K-12 education. And so sometimes students will come and look at our facilities and say, this is actually a step backward from my high school in terms of laboratories and facilities. And so we want to make sure that we remain competitive and that we can offer students facilities that are commensurate with the facilities that they'll be working in when they join the workforce, and not something from 1950s that is not really compatible with what they'll be learning and working in their futures. As it relates to the workforce, the exact same thing. I believe that companies want to know that they're hiring people who understand how to work with the equipment and in the facilities that they have that are current, that are modern. We know that, for example, with the Food Science Nutrition Building, there are at least three universities within driving distance of the University of Minnesota who have built or refreshed their facilities and are much more modern, and those become competitors. Students have a choice, and we want to make sure that, again, faculty and students see our facilities as best and also that are aligned with the world-class programming that they'll receive when they come to the University of Minnesota. As it relates to businesses, you're absolutely right. We have a full banner of dozens and dozens of businesses that work with the university for their research. And the fact of the matter is that we actually don't have capacity to take on all of the businesses who would like to do business with the University of Minnesota because we are doing top-notch research. We are doing development. And with the facilities that we currently have, we simply cannot take on all of the capacity that's out there.
Representative Bogomont.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam Vice President, for just shedding more light and context as to the consequences of the status quo. And I really hope that that 11% on that spreadsheet stands out to all of us as a call to action that, as a state, we need to do a better job of taking care of these buildings and infrastructures on campus, because it's not just about the bricks and mortar. It's about the students and attracting students. It's about our future workforce. It's about making Minnesota an attractive place for businesses to come to. And so I appreciate you giving more context as to what that 11% means. And I really hope that we as a committee, as a legislature going forward, can do a much better job of living up to our commitment to the University of Minnesota, taking care of these buildings and facilities and empowering the incredible work that you do in our state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Brer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on this slide, as I'm looking at it, I think that it should be noted that typically the pattern of the legislature is we don't normally bond every single year. If we do, it's the odd year, so to speak, is much, much smaller. So it's, while it looks, you know, yes, there are zeros there, but we have to understand that the typical pattern of the legislature is the second year of the biennium is typically when we do bonding. Last year, obviously, was a historic over $2 billion in bonding. So that was uncharacteristic, again, historic. So, well, we had a $19 billion surplus, so there was a lot of money to go around, and then we still bonded on top of that. But my question to you is, what's not listed, so now that I've clarified why there's zeros there, the question is, what's not on here is money, the bonding money you receive to build new buildings, because, right, so you get HEPR or, and if you are focused on HEPR, then all the money goes there. But in my tenure here, I'm starting my 12th year, I remember at least some money going to build some new buildings. So I'm wondering if you happen to have that information also, and if you don't, that if we could be provided that so we could look at the totality of bonding for the University of Minnesota, not just the HEPA request, because when you ask for us to spend millions of dollars to build new buildings, of course that takes away from HEPA. So I don't know if you have that with you, but that would be helpful as a comparison, because that's really the total picture that we would need to look at here at the legislature. And if we try to prioritize HEPR, that doesn't always happen, doesn't it, Mr. Chair? But we certainly try at the legislature to prioritize.
Representative Rarick, I believe on their sheet they have prioritized by campus. And those priorities are the number one priority for each campus, ranking them on, all the way down. Is that correct?
Representative Pulaski, those are the list of projects by campus, not necessarily in priority order, but in dollar amount order. But I believe Representative Rarick is asking about the priority of HEPR over new funding for buildings. I agree with you that I don't have that information with me at this time. I can provide that information with you or to you at a later point in time. But this is really about how are we preserving the buildings that are already on the campuses, and with the concession that we aren't going to build any new buildings because the ones that we have are not being well maintained.
Representative Rarick, I'm going to follow up after you're done on this one, but Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I bring it up in relation to the slide that we're looking at right now, and it's only a partial picture of what the legislature has offered in support to the University of Minnesota system. And I think it's important to understand the full picture of the full funding, and it leaves off quite a bit of money off of that because the choice was to build new buildings at both that particular time, and that makes, you know, a lot more to maintain. And I know that you've got 33 million square feet of buildings throughout your entire system. Sure. And just as a comparison, since we'll have Minn State next, it's a little over 22 million square feet across their 54 campuses. So even though they have vastly more campuses, they have less square footage and are doing a phenomenal job. I will say that because I'm looking right at them. So I just want to point that out as well, that you have building heavy, intense, that infrastructure is very heavy, and I understand because you're a university system, so I understand that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Vice President Robert Stapes, I'm going to go back to your breakdown sheet by campus. So this is in a priority of the largest amount of money. What would this look like if we had the priority of what needed to be done first? Is it just the money that drives this, or do we have infrastructure here that's critical and that would be considered number one, and it wouldn't be, I'm looking at Crookston, $6
million. Representative Pulaski, coincidentally, this happens to be almost in order of priority based on dollar amount as well. The only difference would be on the Twin Cities campus, the top priorities would be line number, I believe that it is 55. For the Washington Avenue pedestrian bridge would be a top priority. Line number 47 for the food science nutrition building would be a top priority. And line number 56, Eddie Hall, would be a top priority.
Vice President Roberts Davis, this is an interesting discussion because at one point it was the money that was the top priority, and now apparently this is the priority of each campus, which I thought was clarified in capital investment. So I'm going to pursue this a little bit. This is a different type of bonding bill when we're doing HEPR. When you have new projects, we fund by project, and we give you what it is by project. So if we were to fund this, and I'm going to go back to the discussion about the walls bonding bill, why wouldn't we fund this by project also, targeting our money toward the biggest need in HEPR? And my concern is that if we gave you just a sum of money, would it be dispersed across these campuses, or would it end up all at the main campus of the University of Minnesota? This is a different type of bonding year, and I want to make sure that if we're putting our money into this, that it's going to go based on need.
Chair Pulaski, the list that you have in front of you is the list that is sorted by dollar amount, which also happens to be top priority, coincidentally, for each campus, except for the Twin Cities campus, in which you'll see those three exceptions that I named. And to your point about the governor's bonding budget, or the bonding proposal from the governor, if you were to give us the $103 million, this is the priority in which you would see the projects.
So Vice President Roberts Davis, why wouldn't we craft this bonding bill like we would craft a new project bonding bill by project? And say we were going to give you $103 million, and then we would list by project what we were giving you the money for.
Chair Pulaski and members, there are far more needs than $103 million. Again, we are trying to simplify the list so that you can see overall what it is that we're asking for, the $500 million, how it's comprised, so that there's for you some sort of background and understanding, some foundation for where that number came from. But this is the overall list of HEPA projects that are needed at the university.
Vice President Roberts Davis, I fully understand that. I'm trying to get you to understand that if we're going to put a bonding bill together, it's going to have to be based on need. And since this is a HEPA-driven bill, which is a unique type of bill, why wouldn't we fund this by need and with clarity from the university about what are the needs? I don't necessarily want an answer from you, but if we're putting a bonding bill together based on HEPA, I think we should do it the same way we would do it if you were asking for new projects, and then we would list by project. And hopefully, we would list dispersed across these campuses.
Chair Pulaski, the methodology that you're suggesting would suggest that there's only one need at each campus, and there's far more than one need at each campus.
Vice President Roberts Davis, maybe you're not quite clear on my message here. You're not going to get $500 million. And whatever the number is, and I'm just using the governor's number, but whatever that number is, I would like to put it together in a way, and this would be the Capital Investment Committee, but I would like to have this committee weigh in exactly what those needs would be that would fit the number, whatever that number is. Mm-hmm. So I'd like clarity on what exactly the needs are. My fear is, particularly in higher education, that sometimes the needs aren't met. And there are other decisions that are made. So if this is a list of the needs, then I want to make it crystal clear that these are the needs in rank order of each campus, not just by money, but by what needs to be repaired, critically repaired.
Thank you, Chair Pulaski. We do have a listing of, if you'd like to go further than the top one or two projects by campus, I can provide that to you. What we were trying to provide to you was the number of projects by campus, and we can go to a further sort, but again, it really is dependent upon how much money is allocated to the university as to an overall sort of how the money is allocated.
Vice President Robert Savis, I'm familiar with higher education ed you speak, and I think we're getting into it right now. The clarity is going to have to be in the list that you give us and the order of those needs. I can see the numbers here, and you've got the most expensive at the top, and you're saying those are the ones that apparently are the ones that need to be fixed most. And then you're saying, well, that might not be, depending on the amount of money. There's going to have to be more clarification here between this committee and between the Capital Investment Committee.
Chair Pulaski, may I make a clarification, please?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm not suggesting that the top priority changes based on the amount of money that we receive. The top priorities are the top priorities. What I'm suggesting is that behind that in the list, those things can change based on how much money we receive, because we'll want to look at the overall scope of funding and then decide how the money is allocated. As I go through my presentation, I can show you a breakout of how money is allocated across campuses generally. We have a formulaic methodology for that, and that could hopefully describe how the money would be allocated across the campuses.
Yeah, Vice President Robert Davis, and our method is slightly different than yours. We take a look at what you give us, and then we would list by project. So there's going to have to be some type of combination here that mm-hmm. we understand exactly how this money is going to be used. And I'll end it with that. This isn't the last hearing we're going to have.
Okay, great.
But there's Good going news. To have to be clarification here. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam Vice President. Just for the record, you listed off the top priority projects of the University of Minnesota, and they didn't match what's in our list by number. So could you say that again? Because we may be working off different lists, but the numbers didn't work for me. So,
Chair Pulaski, Representative Robbins, I apologize. The top priorities for the Twin Cities campus would be Eddy Hall, the Washington Avenue Bridge, and the Food Science Nutrition Building.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you for providing that. I appreciate that. And Mr. Chair?
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. The other question I had, I don't know if this is the right time to bring it in, but I understand these are HEPA projects. It's not acquiring new buildings. It's not new construction. But there has been undercurrent of discussion about reacquiring some of the medical buildings. So how does that play into this?
Vice President Roberts Davison, be careful how you answer this one.
Chair Pulaski, Representative Robbins, these are for our educational buildings on our campuses. This is not associated with the academic health portfolio.
Representative Robbins, Representative Liebling and I had a meeting last week to try to get the first steps in actually answering your question. So far, we don't have an answer for you, but we're going to pursue it.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, may Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. For the global discussion of what we're investing in the U, I know last year there were supplemental budget requests and last-minute requests. I just want to make sure that we have all of these pots of money under discussion as we're thinking about it. So if there is going to be a request for the acquisition of the medical campus, I would like that to be part of this broader discussion. Thank you.
Representative Robbins, Representative Liebling and I met for the better part of a half hour here, and we agree with you wholeheartedly. There's going to have to be, because I don't understand where the university is going with the medical request either. Is it capital? Is it general obligation bonds? Is it just straight up revenue? So until we get, if we get clarity, we'll have the hearing here so that you'll understand it. Representative Cleaborn.
Thank you, Chair Pulaski. And mine is just a question about process. I'd like for us to be able to get through the presentation. Both sides have had an opportunity to air some differences, but I'm sure we will all have questions towards the end, but I'd like to be able to have a comprehensive listen and then try to figure out where we need to go to discuss how we would put together our desire to spend the money, as well as what other costs there might be. But if we could please get through the presentation, I would appreciate it.
Representative Cleaborn, I'm taking the chair's prerogative here because I would like a clear understanding of exactly what these numbers mean and what is the priority. Yeah. And the priority isn't always the most expensive. The priority might be the roof that falls, and that is a lot cheaper. But when that roof falls, you've got a lot of work to do with not just replacing the roof. And this is the first time in a long time we've had capital hearings in the Higher Ed Committee. This used to be standard. The Higher Education Committee would make requests to the Capital Investment Committee based on the hearings here. So I'm just searching for clarity. I've taken probably more time than I should have, but then I am the chair.
I'm not challenging your prerogative. I would not do that. But what I'm just saying is the way my mind works, I just need to be able, when it's disjointed, it makes it very hard for me to follow. So that's just.
Representative Cleaver, I've heard this in capital investment where we had the first exchange. And I wasn't clear on what they had presented then. I still am a little fuzzy on what they're presenting right now. So I agree with you. Ask all the questions you want, but we're going to have a thorough understanding of what this HEPA request is and where we can fund it to meet the needs.
And
our needs might not be what the university is telling us right now. So
I wholly appreciate that and understand it. I'm just trying to figure out how I can best understand it as well.
And if we have to have another hearing, we will. But Representative Cleaver, we will. All right, proceed.
Working with our facility assessment and benchmarking partners, we're able to estimate how much should be invested each year. The yellow range on this graph represents facility renewal targets. The bottom line indicates the minimum amount of funding necessary to hold ground on facility upkeep, and the upper line indicates the target to actually make progress on reducing our $5.9 billion facility renewal need. An estimated $700 million has been added to the backlog over the last 10-year period. In the years where we do receive state support, we're typically able to meet our renewal targets. So figures and graphs are very helpful for context, but equally, if not more important, is to talk about the outcomes of your support for our 2024 request. I'd like to lead with talking about safety and accessibility because these things are so fundamental to operating a campus that is welcoming and safe for all students, faculty, staff, and visitors. Your full support of our $500 million request would invest over $100 million across more than 60 safety, code, and accessibility projects across our campuses and outreach centers. Projects like the Washington Avenue Pedestrian Bridge, where we desperately need to replace the crumbling enclosure and provide a safer railing option. To the Multi-Ethnic Resource Center in Morris that lacks an elevator or accessible restroom. To the visitor cabin at Itasca, where the addition of an entrance ramp will allow equal access for visitors with limited mobility. Reliability is next because we can't expect to maintain our status as a top research and teaching university when we cannot rely on our buildings. It's a fact that planned repairs are less costly and less disruptive. When we're unable to keep up, we have emergencies like power outages and building leaks that can displace a class or researcher for hours or even days. This happened over the summer in Duluth because of the heat in our facilities. And you can imagine the angst of a researcher who is concerned that they may lose research that they've been working on for days, months, or even years. Emergencies also tend to create cascading problems. When a roof leaks and water gets inside, all of a sudden we're dealing with a host of problems from mold to potential contact with mechanical or electrical systems. And we do have buildings where when it rains outside, it rains inside. Your support will help us tackle repairs like replacing natural gas lines in Crookston, fixing the roof at McNeil Hall on the St. Paul campus, and completely overhauling the mechanical equipment and food science nutrition that supports their labs and food pilot plants. Finally, your support will protect and extend the life of our investments that the state has made in the past. More than half of the university's buildings are over 50 years old, and many are far older. In fact, our oldest building, Eddie Hall, is almost 140 years old. We had an opportunity to tour Representative Wolgamott, as he mentioned, and others of you, and we would really invite the opportunity to tour any of you who would like to come and see our buildings. We hope that you can appreciate how special these buildings are to both our campus and the entire state, and how critical it is for us to maintain them, keep them safe and functional for years to come. Your support will help us renew Eddie Hall into a new student services hub, as well as restore the exterior facade at Pattee Hall and waterproof the foundation so that it can become the future home for our American Indian Studies program. The photos at the top are from the 1914 portion of McNeil Hall in St. Paul, where waiting too long led to a near miss when a chunk of masonry peeled from the ceiling and landed on a conference room table. Thank goodness that happened overnight and no one was in the building. We know that Heber is cheaper. It is far more cost effective to extend the life of an existing asset than to build new. And it's also much less expensive and less disruptive to do planned repairs and replacement than to address an emergency failure. Heber investments allow us to fix the core infrastructure problems that come along with every aging building, which in turn allows our colleges to use their funds to invest in the programmatic improvements that make this university a preeminent teaching and researching destination. So I'd like to give you a real-life example to further illustrate that point. The 1948 mechanical engineering building was severely outdated for modern teaching and learning. The poor condition of the teaching and research labs was negatively affecting student experience and impacting the quality of education. The faculty could not pursue certain areas of research due to code issues in their laboratories, and there was more than one improvised solution that had been put in place by the resourceful engineers in that building. So along with contributions from the university, we had the choice to renovate or replace, and we chose to renovate. We invested a total of $47 million in Heber over three phases, with construction concluding in 2020. And again, with a $47 million investment in Heber, we estimate that a new building would have cost more than $100 million. And that doesn't include demolition or utility connections or the disruption and displacement of the building tenants during that time. So we know that HEPR is cheaper. The core HEPR investments allowed the university to then reinvest back into the labs and the modern program enhancements to restore the usability and competitiveness in this key program. HEPR funds are allocated to every campus, as well as the research and outreach centers located throughout the state. As a starting point, we use a straightforward formula to determine the allocation to each campus based on their size and condition, and then supplemental HEPR can be allocated to campuses as needed. Over the last 5 years, we have allocated additional funds to campuses if needed, beyond what the model would prescribe. At the governor's proposed $103 million, we would support the top request for each of the system campuses, including the Crookston Heating Plant, which needs critical improvements for reliability. For Duluth, it would be Heller Hall, which needs comprehensive HVAC and code renewal. And last Thursday, you heard from our student, Julia Covert, who said that the building is home to most of the environmental and social sciences classes, and there are thousands of students there each day. The building has not been renovated in 60 years and has outdated classrooms and insufficient lab spaces and poor ventilation, in that they would really like to see that work completed. In Morris, we would invest in the multi-ethnic resource center, which needs major code and life safety improvements. And in the Twin Cities, on the Minneapolis campus, it would be the Washington Avenue Pedestrian Bridge, and in St. Paul, the Food Science and Nutrition Building. We talked briefly about this before, but this really is about a workforce issue. If we don't invest in these buildings, our students have other options. They leave the state. Once they leave the state, they may make relationships both personally and professionally in other places, which means that they don't come back to Minnesota. And that is a workforce leakage issue. Our data shows that far more students leave the state than come to the state for education. And so we want to make sure that we attract and retain our top students and our top talent here in the state of Minnesota for our corporations and for our future workforce. When we receive state funding, we put it to good use, and we're poised to do the same thing in 2024. As we reported in January, 94% of the 2023 appropriation has already been allocated to critical renewal projects. And it's clear that the capital investments are good for the local economy as well, because these projects support hundreds of vendors across the state, with 90% of our expenditures going back to Minnesota companies. We are wasting no time investing the 2023 HEPR appropriation across the entire state from Ely to Waseca. This is just a sampling of the 45 projects that were funded with your $43.5 million appropriation. The complete list of projects and funding are available in the report that we submitted in January, and we'd be happy to resend a copy of that to anyone who would wish to see that. And so, you know, as I close, I just want to remind you again of what our student from University of Minnesota Duluth shared last week when she said that students deserve a safe, comfortable, and accessible place to learn and grow, and we are Minnesota's future. Please invest in us. So with that, I'll close and stand for any questions you may have.
Members, questions? Representative McDonald, do you have a question or just a twitch?
I was just scratching my head, Mr. Chair. Since you called on me, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Question for you, has the U in the past put aside funds for a capital improvement project over the years so they can gain up a fund balance to repair buildings and other assets preservation?
Vice President Roberts Davis.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we don't save up for capital improvement projects. However, when we receive HEPR, the different colleges often use their own funding for the programmatic changes and things that HEPR does not cover. So HEPR will do mechanical, electrical, building envelope projects, but it doesn't do the interior parts of the building. And so we supplement the HEPR dollars in order to make the program fully operational.
Representative McNeil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then last question, Chancellor. Does the Alumni Association is there a program that the alumni would pool some money together, or fundraising for asset preservation? I would think that would be, maybe you do it already. If not, certainly your alumni would love the U and the buildings and want to continue to preserve its precious assets.
Vice President Roberts Davis.
Chair Pulaski, Representative, that's a great question. What we generally find is that donors are looking to invest in people and places. They are not necessarily interested in donating toward projects like Keeper and reinvestments in buildings. They want to be able to showcase something that they can actually interact with. And so, you know, plumbing, boiler rooms, those types of things are not things that they can interact with, but scholarships and students and faculty and welcome you into a wing or a floor of a building are things that are more interactive. And so that's typically where we find traction with getting donor interest.
Last question, Mr. Chair, thank you. Have you asked the donors? Just the reason I just questioned the last question is because being active in my home community with nonprofit groups, we often did fundraising and asked donors to donate to important projects in the community, buildings, parks. So donors usually certainly want to be, you know, benefit from their donations for human property, if you will, and their experience, but also in buildings. So I find it surprising that donors wouldn't want to say, hey, I'd be happy to donate a portion of my donation to a building preservation that'll last hopefully 50 to 100 years.
Representative McDonald, I asked that question in capital investment, so I'm intrigued if I'll get the same answer today. Vice President Roberts.
Chair Pulaski, Representative, I have not personally asked the question. I know that our Alumni Association, our foundation, do all of those fundraising calls, and you know, again, historically, their data shows that these are not the types of things that their donors are interested in donating toward. They would prefer to see those things that are more interactive.
Okay, Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. You had said far more students are leaving Minnesota than coming in. Do you happen to know the approximate number? Go ahead.
Representative, I don't have that number with me, but I did have that data from our data analysts at back at the office, and so I can provide that information to you.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then we've got another source that's saying the same thing that I did say a few hearings ago, and I know you didn't like my source of the data, but I would love to hear what that number actually is. I had heard it was around 20,000, but again, that was a few years back, so I'd love to hear what the current number is.
Representative Rarick, it's not that I didn't like your source. I would have liked to have seen your source. Vice President Roberts Davis.
Thank you, Chair Pulaski. 20,000 are leaving the state. Is that your source, your information?
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it was a few years ago, pre-pandemic, but it was 20,000 net that we are losing, that are leaving. You know, you had said far more are leaving than coming in, so that was the net change, was about 20,000.
Okay. Happy
Vice President Roberts, if you want to get back to us on that, you can.
I will. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I just want to take the opportunity to congratulate the Regents for the appointment of the next President Cunningham, and looking forward to collaborating on many things. I know we're talking about the need at the U. And I'll give you a quick example, the Washington Bridge. That's beyond the University of Minnesota. And the tragic incidents that happened on that bridge, when many people have lost their lives, I've worked on that bridge several times in any given year. I think it's upon us to see this not only as something for the University of Minnesota, but also for the communities in my district. Who crossed that bridge for many purposes. So it's beyond just the University of Minnesota. We're saving lives by making sure that we put the life safety codes that are required on that bridge. In fact, I've had from many parents who have reached out to me about the incidents that have taken place. Many people have lost their lives, so they've committed suicide, essentially, by just going there. So it's well known for that. I'm hoping that we can address that issue this year. Likewise, I think some of the facilities like Eddie Hall, which is the quiet entrance of the University of Minnesota, it's a building that we want to reflect. It was one of the first buildings that you know, the university built. So it's upon us to make sure that we protect that legacy, that historical nature of it. And I'm hoping that not only looking at the $103 million that the governor proposed, we need to look at the totality of the need and where we can have an impact of the need of the University of Minnesota and the Minn State. So, Mr. Chair, thank you so much. I look forward to that robust discussion.
Representative Clyburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think many of us agree with the idea of how do we best get the bang for our buck. Whatever we spend, we want it to have a really good ripple effect. And that's part of my comments today. The food science building is an embarrassment to our state. We are a large agricultural state, and that lab should have been redone decades ago. And we have lost students to other states, and my daughter went and took and got her PhD in food science in another state. And when I saw their facilities compared to our facilities, to your comment about how we can compete for those grants and how we can bring in manufacturers to our state, they need to know that that research will be supported here. And so I'm very excited to see that that food lab is on this list to be redone, but I also see it's also not cheap, right? So we have to make investments to make money and to drive our economy. So I want to say thank you about that. And I want to just make sure that I understand, one other thing, when you said raining inside and outside, I know that when some tours were being set up for either professors to try to recruit professors, you have to look at the weather to say, can we take them through this space? Because they won't come here if they need an umbrella to do a tour of the university on the inside. And that is a real fact. I mean, I have worked with people who were bringing in professors for that space. And then looking at being able to be competitive for NIH grants, being able to be competitive for agricultural grants, being able to be competitive for educational grants, we have to have the facilities that can support the research. And that's a huge part of the university's mission, which is also often left behind when we only focus on the academic piece. So we've asked you to do this work, and I'm very interested in how we can best support that mission. And I know that you were a good steward of our state buildings when you were the commissioner of admin, so I'm asking and looking forward to that relationship as we go forward with the HEPR request. Thank you.
Vice President Roberts Davis.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Clyburn. I was looking, I hoped I had some additional supporting slides here to show you photos of Wilson Library, where we literally have floor to ceiling plastic because all of our books are in there and it rains inside when it rains outside. And obviously, that's no place for us to keep books that are obviously very, very important and very fragile. Thank you.
Representative Clyburn.
No, thank you.
I'm going to request another meeting with the university, and I would request that this list that we see, not just on money, I would like to see a list broken down on need. And this goes to the questions that were raised by Representative Nora, Representative Clyburn. So I'd like to see it first. I'd like to meet with you in my office, go over this with staff, and then if the follow-up hearing would be on that. So. Vice President Robert Davis.
Chair Pulaski, may I provide you with this list based on need with just the top projects highlighted on
Do you have enough for the entire committee right now?
I'm not sure that I do. I don't. It's the list that was provided
earlier. It should be in your packets.
Okay. I'm still going to request a meeting with you. I want clarity here before we have another hearing that exactly what we're going to do here. I stated it before. Crafting this bonding bill, why wouldn't we craft this similar to a bonding bill that we would with new projects? And we would craft it by project in the HEPR requests. So that discussion is going to be a discussion I'm going to press for. Why wouldn't we craft the bill that way? And this goes to the points that have been made by several members here about things that are happening. I don't necessarily need a response today. but I want the university to consider that that would be the way possibly we would be able to use whatever funds we're going to have in the bonding bill the best way. You don't need to respond. I see you're nodding, so.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Pulaski. I'm just trying to think of the process, generally how it's gone in the past, and I'm just thinking out loud here, but generally we have always asked for individual projects and a HEPA request, and that HEPA request has really just been all-inclusive. So that's why we didn't break them out by projects.
And this
I understand.
And this is a new world in capital investment. You have a bill that's totally HEPA, and it's a different type of bonding bill, and you have higher ed involved in it now. So I think we're going to hopefully craft a different type of bill. The possibility exists.
Thank you.
So thank you. I know, unless there's another. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Polk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Forgive me if this was stated. I apologize for running a little bit late here. I was in another committee, but I think we've all sort of voiced the need to sort of address projects and address capital investment sort of by need. But I think it's important really to recenter this conversation. And as I look at the chart in the presentation here showing need and how much was actually provided, you know, I think we all are concerned with getting the best bang for our buck, but when a total of 11% of the need is met, I think it's hard to say that we're getting any bang for our buck. And those of us who are big fans of the statistical analysis world, as I am, know that means tend to be sort of, they tend to react more strongly to strong outliers. And so if I take out 2014, which percentage-wise was something of an outlier, that number goes down to 9%. So we're talking less than one-tenth of the university's request being funded. And I there are similar trends, I should point out, with the numbers that were provided by Minnesota State. And so I think I just bring that up to sort of remind us that, it's pay me now or pay me later. And we're seeing the results of a significant lack of public investment in a public good, in public buildings, in public facilities. And those costs don't just go away. They just end up coming back because, pieces of the ceiling fall onto a conference room table or students are paying more in tuition or whatever, whatever those costs may be. And so I think when we're talking about bang for our buck, we just need to be clear that pay me now is always cheaper, or perhaps a better way of putting that is that pay me later is always more expensive. It's always worse results. It's always harder on communities, as Representative Knorr mentioned. So just really wanted to sort of make that point, because I think it's important to remember why we're having the conversation in the first place. Thank you.
You wish to respond? Or?
Thank you, Representative.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I own a 100-year-old building in Delano. It's a flat roof. You know how the chair likes flat roofs. Mm-hmm. Actually slanted about 10%, but so I'm not a true flat roofer, Mr. Chair, but close. I do have to get up there and shovel snow off when there's a leak, and we've had a leak. It just baffles me that in this building that there's leaking on the roof and you have no funds whatsoever to fix it, the only fix is to cover up the books with plastic. That just seems odd to me. There must be something missing, that there's no money whatsoever, that you couldn't call a roofing company to come and fix the hole in the roof, because the building will continue to deteriorate if you don't, that you need to come to the state legislature, ask for money, and have us vote on it, some funds to fix it for the roof. I can't even imagine that. Who on earth would even allow that to happen? So I must be missing something, certainly, and if I am, you certainly will, you can slap my hand on this one, but I don't understand how that's not fixed right away. Maybe you did, maybe this is in the past, but if it's still leaking, how on earth do you have no money to fix it? That just is surprising. I'm curious to get your answer to that.
Vice President Robert Davis.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm looking for the line item dollar amount on here. I'm not that quick with it, but I'll hopefully find it here. These are large projects. We don't have a fund. We don't have a CAPRA fund like the state of Minnesota does. If we don't have the funding for it, and we don't have HEPA, we are not able to make these repairs. The money doesn't come out of programming. It doesn't come from any other account. It comes from HEPA.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, just to, I'd be happy or eager to hear your response on this and how they would allow this to continue to deteriorate where it's going to cost even more money. Is there really no money available? I mean, you don't think the donors who donate hundreds of millions of dollars annually as alumni wouldn't come to the table to help save a building? I'm really surprised by this. Mr. Chair, I would imagine you'd feel the same way.
Well, Representative McDonald, I am a charter member of the Anti-Flat Roof Society. And public buildings that are flat, and I don't care if it's 3 degrees or 4 or 5, usually it's an architect with a bow tie that has designed it, which is another whole issue. And the one thing they do well is leak. That's it. They leak, and they're going to leak in 10 years, or they're going to leak in less than that. And when we get 19 inches of snow in a winter, yeah, that's going to be hard on it. My problem with this whole thing is this is a brand new world we're in. You've offered us a bonding request that's just cheaper. You've never done that before.
True.
Also, we've broken it down by committee. If you recall last year when we were looking at the fact that you had record enrollment problems, we did that over a 10-year span by committee. This committee has said that we're going to look at campus by campus. And I want to have a bonding bill that when it's done, we'll address the needs of as many of the campuses within the university system as possible. I agree with the flat roof, but I don't think we're going to fix the flat roofs with this bonding bill. But hopefully in the future, they'll know the difference between a pitched roof and a flat roof. And we have one more
Representative
member,
Blasky.
Representative Robbins. Vice President.
I would just love to respond quickly and just say that we have a list just for this year of $500 million in priorities, and it is very important that we maintain that the roof and the books and all of the facilities, but there is a long list of priorities, and although that's important, we have life safety issues, we have code issues, we have so many things, and it's very difficult to prioritize what's going to be done first, and a leaky roof is bad, but we also have a Washington Avenue bridge issue as well. Thank you, sir.
Representative Robinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. I just want to respond to a couple things. First, I'm kind of stunned there's not some sort of an emergency fund for repairs. Like, for the regents listening, in the scope of the university budget, that might be something that needs to be considered. Secondly, to my colleagues who have rightly pointed out that sort of perhaps underfunding of investment in capital projects over the years, on the list provided since 2014, it's been, largely always having a governor from the majority party, and the governor this year is only proposing $103 million. So I think that's something that needs to be considered when we're blaming the legislature for lack of investment. I'm not sure that's appropriate, particularly when we are spending $730 million on renovating this building. That would cover all the HEPA requests, and there'd be leftover for what the Minsky system's requesting. Right. And it's one building, which is not fully occupied, as I keep saying. I know I'm beating a dead horse, Mr. Chair, but to me, the lack of priorities by perhaps the governor, but certainly by the decision to fund a $730 million renovation of this building is shocking to me, and I just had to get that on the record. Thank you.
Okay. I believe we have one more testifier who may not want to come up now. But welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good morning. Chair Pawlowski and members of the committee, thanks for having me today. My name is Kathleen Hill-Gallant. I am an associate professor of nutrition in the Department of Food Science and Nutrition. We're housed in the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences, CFANS. And I work in the food science and nutrition building, so one that is on a top priority for this HEPA request. Within my role, I teach both undergraduate and graduate students, and I conduct research in nutrition and chronic disease. And I am a registered dietitian. My education responsibilities at the U are to teach future dietitians. So our building is one with critical needs for infrastructure improvements in this HEPA request. These updates are long overdue, and I'm happy to hear that several of you have come and toured our building and saw it. And as much as I don't like to hear that our building is an embarrassment, it is really an accurate statement compared to our peers. So these are long overdue. They're affecting the safety, the learning environment, our research productivity, and our ability to get external research funding into the university. And ultimately, all of that affects our ability to fulfill our land grant mission for research, teaching, and service to the state of Minnesota. So I came to the U just in 2020, and I came from another Midwest Big Ten land grant peer institution. And what drew me here was the long-standing reputation of the university, the 50-year reputation of the Food Science and Nutrition Department. We've had many illustrious researchers and a lot of great students coming out of this department. But also, I wanted to be closer to my family here in Minnesota, and that was a big draw. So as much as I was happy to come here, I quickly experienced challenges related to the condition of our building. So I purchased a key instrument for my research when I first arrived, and it really had some very simple electrical and ventilation needs. But this ended up requiring construction that cost more than the instrument itself, and this was largely due to needing asbestos abatement. To do that installation. So the aging infrastructure of our building really impedes and makes more costly our ability to conduct and fund world-class research. I'm also currently awaiting receiving a significant grant of several million dollars from the National Institutes of Health to conduct two clinical research trials in people with kidney disease related to preventing cardiovascular complications and kidney disease. But the success of that project and the ability to fund future research is dependent on having adequate facilities that are included in this HEPA funding request. So our department is a hub of food science and nutrition for this state. Through our mission, we support the vast Minnesota ag and food industry, farmers, and also on the healthcare side, the health and nutrition of Minnesotans. Our community nutrition research and outreach includes partnership in many different communities, urban, rural, and tribal nations across the state. And notably, approximately 75% of the dietitians who are practicing within the state of Minnesota received their education and training through our department. So for those of you who might not be familiar with what dietitians do, dietitians really have a critical role in the front line of chronic disease prevention, but they also provide the nutrition care within the healthcare system for Minnesotans who are dealing with chronic disease and other medical issues. So in my closing, I urge you to fully support this HEPA request so that we can continue to deliver on our mission. Thank you.
Questions, members? I only have one question for you, and I'm looking at two different sheets, the one I got in capital investment and then the one that I have here, and there's just a slight difference. Can you explain, it says phase one. So, Professor Gallant, what does phase one get you for $25 million?
Chair Pawlowski and members of the committee, I don't know if I have the specifics on that. My understanding is it's for the real critical infrastructure with the plumbing and heating, electrical, those sorts of items in the building.
Answer that. So
yes.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, Mr. Chair, Brian Swanson with Facilities. If I'm looking at the same thing you are here, we're talking about line, it was originally line 47 on the first sheet we gave you, which says food science and nutrition capital renewal dash phase. The right, dash and, phase
and
was
the one you gave us here is 46, but
yep. The dash phase was a typo that didn't get removed and then got corrected.
All right.
So the 25 is the number that we would be able to accomplish the scope.
So there is a phase about. One then.
There was originally split in our planning a phase one and a phase two. At the amount we've got listed here, we could get what we need done. And
so there is no phasing of this building?
At the 20, full 25, I think we should be good.
All right, so when we have another list, let's make sure it's clear that there isn't a phase one and a phase two.
Correct.
All right, thank you. Members, any other questions? Representative Rare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just really quickly, what is the age, before you go too far, what's the age of this building that, since it has asbestos? And can you just explain just a tiny bit about what you're going to be doing for $25 million? And I think the other gentleman
yes.
probably would have that answer.
Thank you.
You're welcome to do it if you'd like.
No, thank you.
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair. Representative Rarick, the food science and nutrition building was the original parts date back to the 1950s, and it's been added on to it a variety of points. Most of the systems inside are obsolete. There's no fire sprinkler. There's no current mechanical system. There's no air conditioning. The electrical system's inadequate. It's the wrong voltage and type for the kind of modern electrical equipment. So like we can do with HEPR, this is largely a heart and lung transplant for the building. Modernizing all the systems that are behind the scenes, which then allow the faculty to come in and do the kind of improvements they can get funding for through grants. So we use the state money to fund all the infrastructure for the building, and then donors, faculty can come along and fund the parts that provide that programmatic enhancement.
Representative Rare.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wow, that's almost unbelievable that you would have a building that's almost uninhabitable the way you described it. A lot. So $25 million, it will take it. How much is the entire project then? So it's got to be more than $25 million if you're doing, sounds Mr. like Swanson. Almost like a gut and repair.
Chair Pulaski, Representative Barrick, this, the project itself is 25 right now. If along the way this one gets funded and we find other things that come with donor money that we would tag on, we would do it. But right now the scope is the $25 million. If you look at, there are other projects in the request, the Eddie Hall project, where the state is funding a portion of that, but then we are counting on donors and others to come and finish off the rest of the funding there.
So, Mr. Swanson, this is a partial answer to Representative McDonald's question. You do seek donors to do some of these repairs and replacements. And I see other heads nodding. That wasn't exactly the answer we got in capital investment, but I'm pleased that you do. And again, sure. Let's get clarity on this list so we make sure that we exactly know the amount. So. Sure. Yeah, Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for clarity, it's my understanding that HEPR can be used for physical structure, but it's not for things that can be moved once the building is put into place. So a refrigerator, a pilot plant, I mean, once it's bolted to the ground, maybe it could be done at a later date, but not at this date. Is that correct?
Mr. Swanson.
Chair Pulaski, Representative Cleburne, you are correct, but it's even more limited than that.
That's what I thought.
HEPR, the statute, which is, it's a wonderful program. It's existing buildings for existing program. So when we come in and do a HEPR project, we will fix all the things for the building that are largely the behind-the-scenes things. If we're going to make a programmatic change, that's when we use other funding. And those are oftentimes the cases where the donor funding will come in and make those enhancements. And that was the example that Vice President Roberts Davis gave us in the mechanical engineering building, where HEPR did the entire heart and lung transplant for the 1940s mechanical engineering building. The College of Science and Engineering was then able to use those improvements to leverage donor funds, particularly in the student lab space in the places that had a lot of donor appeal. So the HEPR money enables the donor money, but it does not substitute for donor money.
Representative Cleburne.
No, I was just going to say, I think the committee members might be interested in knowing how high the temperature goes in that food science building where we're asking students to work. It is incredible.
Yeah. May I?
Professor Gallo.
Yes, so Chair Pelosi and Representative Claiborne, I don't know the exact temperature, but we have to go home. I mean, we will get emails if we're not yet on campus that the temperatures have gone high and that if we can work from home, we should, and that it's really difficult to be in the building. And sometimes even stronger than that, like it's not healthy to be in the building. And so that is definitely something that affects us more frequently than it should.
Representative Claiborne?
No, that's fine.
All right, then I think we're done with the University of Minnesota. We have 15 minutes for the Minn State system to start, and we'll have to pick them up later. So, Chancellor, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. And members, if you would save your materials in your packets, because we'll be revisiting them. So,
Chair Pelosi, members of the committee, thank you for your service to Minnesota. I'm Scott Olson. I have the honor of serving Minnesota as the Chancellor of Minnesota State's Colleges and Universities. I'm excited that we have with us today two campus facilities directors, James Splett from Minneapolis College and Joshua Blackwell from North Hennepin Community College, and my colleague Brian Yolitz and I thought you would really enjoy their boots on the ground perspective on how your investments have helped keep our students safe, warm, and dry. Our facilities workers are amazing in how they take care of the infrastructure of Minnesota, what you've built, so we're glad to have them with us today. Mr. Chair, I know this committee thinks in terms of biennium, but their testimony is going to be so unique that you would only hear something like it once every 4 years. Once every 4 years. Oh, and it's leap day today. We are pleased to be joined today by the chair of our Board of Trustees, Roger Moe. Trustee Dawn Erlinson was here, but she had to leave. President Dee Dee Peasley from St. Paul College was here, but she had to leave. And we're also joined by Jennifer Irwin, who's the statewide leader of the AFSCME bargaining unit. I'm going to go through this kind of quickly. You know, Minnesota State's the engine of Minnesota's workforce. So in order for us to graduate more nurses, teachers, accountants, tradespeople, public safety officers, and the like, we need spaces that are safe, warm, and dry. Our story is similar to the story at the University of Minnesota. I was pleased to spend time with President Ettinger, going around to different communities, talking about the need, and I look forward to doing the same when Dr. Cunningham becomes the U of M president. Chair Pelosi, with your permission, I would like to now, with the time we have, turn the presentation over to Mr. Splett and Mr. Blackwell, and then we can later come back with slides and talk about the 35,000-foot view. But as long as they're here, we thought you'd enjoy talking to some folks who oversee the facilities.
No, that's fine. We've got about 10 minutes, so I know that they're busy, and welcome to the committee, and we'll start. I don't know which one's first, but whoever's first, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is James Splett. I'm with the Facilities Department at Minneapolis Community and Technical College. I want to start by thanking you for your past support of Minneapolis College and the Minnesota State Colleges and University Systems. Without your help, we would not be able to operate our campuses. For those of you not familiar with Minneapolis College, we are located in downtown Minneapolis on the western edge between the Basilica and Loring Park. We serve 10,000 credit-seeking students a year, 70% of which are from traditionally underrepresented groups, and we're very proud of that. And again, we couldn't do what we do without your help, so we are here to thank you and to ask you to again go to your colleagues and make a strong case for robust funding for our institutions. I can tell you on Minneapolis, our campus right now, we have one HEPR project that we are just finishing up, and that is one of our skyways that connect our COP hall with our technology building. That skyway was built in 1980, and like a lot of our structures in the Minnesota State system, it has not been updated or touched since the time it was constructed, so it was way past due its life expectancy for an upgrade. And with the funds we got through the HEPR bonding, we were able to totally renovate that, confirm there was no structural steel degradation, update the life safety structures, the accessibility issues, and we now have a wonderful new skyway connecting those two blocks of our campus that should last another 30 years without any problems and keep our students and staff safe and ease their travels around campus. We also have two requests in Minnesota State's current HEPR request before you at Minneapolis College, one of which is our technology building roof. Chair Pulaski, I was unaware that there was a anti-flat roof society, but after the meeting here today, I will hit you up for the details on how to gain membership, because that roof is in disrepair. It's going to cost us $8 million to replace that roof. Our technology building is an entire city block, so it is a massive structure. But unfortunately, the architects and engineers are telling us that that roof is in failure status and needs to be replaced.
But is that the first time it's been replaced, or the second, or the third?
Sir, I don't know the answer to that. I know the last time it was replaced was in 1995. The structure was built in 1976. So it hasn't been replaced since 95.
All right. When you talk about flat roofs, usually it's more than once. And it's almost a decade-by-decade routine, particularly depending on the winters and the weight of the snow. So you're more than welcome to join the Anti-Flat Roof Society. It's a very select group.
I appreciate it, sir. So anyway, like our friends from the U of M referenced, when it rains outside, unfortunately it rains on the fifth floor of our technology building, and that space houses our world-class nursing lab. So we have some amazing students in there that when it's raining or when snow's melting, doing their work in their labs and in their classes, they're stepping around waste cans and buckets that are catching raindrops that are coming through the roof. And as the U of M referenced, when you have a roof leak, you have more problems just than buckets catching water. You're having a degradation of all your building systems. We have waterproofing, fire control systems that are being damaged by that roof leak. So this is something that we desperately are hoping for funding to correct. The second current HEPR funding request that we have that we're hoping for your support is a replacement of our emergency power system and an upgrade of some of our electrical components on campus. Our emergency power system, we have five city blocks that our campus is made up of, and each of those blocks has an emergency generator. And two of those five generators have been deemed past their useful life. Frankly, they keep me up at night. I'm worried about whether or not if an emergency were to arise, if they would function as we need them to. Although we test them and they were up to code, candidly, when the technicians from the service companies come out to do the routine maintenance, they're shocked that we still have those, that we're still depending on that type of, that age of product. In addition to the update of the emergency generators, what that would also do is let us do some upgrades to other electrical components of our campus and hopefully avoid a similar event as to what happened in August of 2022. When we had one of our electrical systems that powers our technology building, that big beast, we have two electrical services that power that, and one of them caught fire and melted and shut down half of the power to that entire building. And that building has the distinction of being the biggest one building in the entire campus. It's a monster, and it has all of our student services and so many of our technical programs and other classrooms and things. And that situation would have been on the news if it weren't for the fact that it happened luckily during the 3 weeks between the end of summer semester and the start of fall semester. So we were able to get the equipment fabricated that we needed and get that up and running before fall semester started. But in the interim, we had emergency power running from half of the campus that had power to the other half that, or the other half of the building that did have power to the half that did not, in order to keep some basic functions up operating and get enrollment going and welcoming students and all the things that we needed to continue to do even though classes weren't in session. So those are the two examples that Minneapolis College has before you this session. And again, without HEPR, we can't operate our campus, and we can't do all the great people I work with couldn't do the job that they do and love to do for our students. So we are respectfully asking you to really advocate for us this year and come back with strong support for a full HEPR funding. And I would appreciate it if you keep me off the news. You know, ever since that happened with that electrical thing, I have this reoccurring nightmare that I'm going to be standing in front of the technical building, in front of the cameras, and trying to explain why we had to shut down the school for a couple weeks. So, Mr. Chairman, committee members, I appreciate
Thank you.
Time.
We've got about 5 minutes, and I know Mr. Blackwell's anxious to give his report. So.
Thank you, Chair.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Joshua Blackwell. I'm the facility director at North Hennepin Community College. I'll try and make this as short and sweet since we only have 5 minutes left here. We recently had been funded on a boiler project that was funded over the fiscal year 20. That project allowed us to leverage the cost savings from repairing those assets into energy efficient projects for LED lighting upgrades, which we have been able to take those savings and put them into further projects. What I wanted to bring up by saying this is asset preservation isn't, I don't have the exact same mindset as everyone else on asset preservation. I believe that is a ends to a means that provides us with the opportunity to not just keep the things that we have in a effective, efficient manner, but it also gives us an opportunity to fix things that we wouldn't have fixed with those funds that we were trying to just keep alive. As for an example, on our list, we have our chillers for this coming year, and this just previous fiscal year, you funded our cooling towers. Our cooling towers cost us roughly 12% of the replacement cost just recently to fix the membrane on the bottom of that because it wasn't holding water to allow it to be effective in the manner it needed to be to run our system. So with those funds being saved, we can roll them into other projects. We can roll them into other expenses that we have as a facility. We can roll it into having personnel because we have a lot more liberty with the funds that we have in other cost centers versus what we can do with asset preservation, as stated before. By being proactive, understanding what we have and what we can do with these funds, it allows us to plan and predict for the future and actually allocate our funds in a manner that are useful, that are to a point that Representative McDonald stated, that is something that we can look at and all verify as these are useful things that are respectable that we want to put money into. Asset preservation, in my viewpoint, is keeping the things we have in a manner that we're proud of, that supports our mission, our goals as a state. And I just wanted to share with you, I'm very thankful for everything that you've given us and shared with us so far. And we look forward to the opportunity to use the funds, if given, to do good by everybody and be good stewards with that. So thank you.
No, thank you. I fully understand, particularly when you're dealing with a flat roof with your utilities on it, that only adds to the problem of leaking. We're going to have you come back. And Mr. Yolas, I see you sitting there very anxious, so I'm going to add one more thing to your anxiety. Can you tell us when we return about how the reserves are used in the MnState system to address HEPR issues? And can you tell us that by campus? Not today, but at the next meeting? Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
I'll sit on Mr. Blackwell's lap. Mr. Chair, Brian Yolis, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities. Indeed, we'll come back and talk about reserves and how that impacts some of our facility work.
And then on your list, I know it's in alphabetical order. Is there a list by priority order by campus? Unless I didn't go deep enough. But.
Mr. Chair, indeed, I saw many members cruising through our list, and what I'd like to do is just walk through the packet. It takes 2 seconds.
Okay, go ahead.
The blue packet, I believe it's all stapled together. If you look at pages 1 through 3, the very top, it says Minnesota State 2024 HEPR $200 million. That is our capital, that is our HEPR list. It's listed by college and university and by college and university priority. So example, you'll see at Alexandria Technical and Community College, their number one priority is the HVAC replacement of the campus main building, and then their number two priority is the 100 wing roof replacement. And that goes down for each of our 33 colleges and universities. The next set of pages, make sure I get this right, pages 4 and 5 reflect if we were to get the number ones of each of our college universities, and that would total about $109 million. And then the next set is pages 6 and 8, and that reflects if we were able to fund the priority number ones and twos at each of our college universities. And then finally, on the last page, page 9, Mr. Chair and committee, is the governor's recommendation. That does not fund all of our projects. It funds about 23 projects for our college universities. But the list is indeed by our college university and their priority, or as they presented them to us.
So, Mr. Yolis, if I go to page 5, the one where you listed the campus priorities for 108.568, let's just assume that that is what we gave you, and we actually put into the bill these projects. That would be fine with the MnState system?
That is the priorities, Mr. Chair, that's the priorities presented to us in December when we created this list. Right. What sometimes happens is that campuses will have a roof leak, like Mr. Spleeth talked about, and he wouldn't want to adjust some of their priorities, but this is generally where we're going to be.
I'm interested in the reserves, because part of the reserves are supposed to be used for emergencies like that when you don't have the bonding money. Representative Cleburne.
Mr. Chair, I just want us to be careful that if they're able to have some efficiencies as they're doing the projects, right, if they can, that we don't end up allocating money that couldn't be used for anything else. So I.
Representative Cleburne, that's a valid point, but I'm also here for specificity.
Oh, no.
And I'm assuming that the specificity of these requests is what they need and how they would be used. This is going to be, despite the size of the bill, a very tight bill. And again, to repeat, I would like it to go to the projects that are the greatest need and make sure we've addressed those things.
And I would be in concurrence with that viewpoint. I just want to make sure that we don't allocate money that can't be used. That's all.
Yeah, I share that. But yeah. MnState has reserves by campus also that they have used when they have had issues. So we'll revisit all of this, members. Save everything. Don't throw anything away. We don't want to reprint paper. Mr. Yolis, you raised your hand. You have a statement?
No, Mr. Chair. I was just adjusting my microphone, and I apologize. And really, Representative Cleburne was talking about a procedural thing.
One last thing. Representative Wolgamont, where are you?
Mr. Chair, I have a motion to make with your permission.
Fire away.
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I attended our hearing on February 22nd, and subsequently I reviewed the minutes for that meeting, and after careful deliberation and consideration, Mr. Chair, I believe it's in the best interest of our committee that we adopt these minutes. So I would like to move that we come together and that we adopt the minutes for the February 22nd, 2024 committee.
Representative Wolgamont moves the minutes. Is there any discussion or correction that needs to be made?
I mean, we're 3 minutes over, so.
That's just tar cheese. Seeing none, all those in favor of the Wolgamont motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Meeting adjourned.